recorded live, not in the usual undisclosed location somewhere underneath Portland, Oregon, but in fact being recorded somewhere on your eerie surface world at the Lone Pine Farm and Studio on Bainbridge Island in Washington State. This is episode 99 of I'll Have a Beer and Talk. iHabit is my vanity project excuse to tell people that my job is to talk about a randomly selected craft beer each week, and also inform people about several technology-related stories that I found interesting that I read on the internet that they may have missed. All the time it takes me to drink the beer! My name is Gary, and my wife and I are at a week-long artist residency here at the Lone Pine Farm. Our mission, aside from kill or be killed, is to make art for an entire week. We'll be collecting various plants and material we find here, process them, and then make paper out of them and use that paper to make art. Can you tell that I'm not a professional artist? My wife is. She has a BFA and MFA in fine arts and everything. If you want more information about the residency, please visit lonepinestudio.org. That is LonePineStudio.org. And also pulpandeckle.com. That's PulpandeckleCom. I brought most of my studio equipment with me, but I did not bring the randomizer. That's a bizarrely overly engineered device I cobbled together that randomly selects a beer from the vast collection I keep in the iHabit bunker. I figured since I'll be away from that beer supply, there is no need for the randomizer. While visiting a market here on the island, my wife and I came across a cart full of brown paper-bagged mystery six-packs. So of course I got one for the show. I am going to randomly select one from the bag here. And I have 10 Barrel Brewing Company's Raspberry Crush, a 5.2% ABV Berliner Weissbier. That's a style I haven't encountered before. Hooray! According to BeerAdvocate.com, Berliner Weissbiers are top-fermented, bottle-conditioned wheat beers. They are not your average wheat beers, though. They are made both with traditional warm-fermenting yeasties and also with some lactobacillus culture as well. According to their write-up, they have rapidly vanishing heads and are of a clear, pale, golden straw-like color. They have a little hop bitterness and have sharp citric notes and tart, sour, acidic, and refreshing flavors. I've been on a goes kick lately, so this is right up my alley. Brace yourselves, the beer is ready for activation. And no, that's not your imagination. This, I'm in a kind of an open, wide open room with a lot of echo, and there's a tin roof, so you can hear the rain that's been falling. Anyway, the raspberry sour here is, unsurprisingly, a nice red color with a pink head that is actually rapidly vanishing before my very eyes, so they weren't lying about that. It smells quite tart, almost like a raspberry cake. Let's see if it tastes like a moist raspberry cake. Interesting. It's quite pleasant. It's like having some raspberry juice with some carbonation and a little bit of bitterness, and the tartness is a little bit stronger, too. This is really nice. This is the kind of beer that you can just sip while sitting on the couch reading some fancy art book. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. So this is the first time I've been a residency artiste. I know it's not supposed to be a vacation. We do actually have work to do, but it's work we actually want to do. So in that respect, this is a vacation. We're only here for 7 days, but according to science, if it was 8 days, we'd feel the most refreshed at the end of it. That's according to research published in the somewhat gratingly named Journal of Happiness Studies, according to Lifehacker. The results of the study seem to indicate that one's feelings of personal well-being and happiness increase quickly the second a break is started. This feeling of relief seems to hit the apex at day 8. The researchers who published the study think that 8 days is the average amount of time an individual takes to let go of any stress related to a regular day-to-day routine. After the 8th day, the good vibes begin to dissipate, slowly at first, but by day 11 of being away from it all, the happiness seems to drop off a cliff. The researchers think feelings of boredom or even homesickness begin to eat away at the no-pressure-slash-all-leisure mindset. More depressingly, it seems that one day after being back at the rat race, the positive emotions felt while on a vacation are effectively eradicated, as the mind snaps back to its depressing reality. So, I didn't mean for this story to get so dark, sorry. Embrace the void. But the researchers suggest that when planning a vacation, make it last about 7 to 11 days to get the most out of it, and take 7 to 11 day vacations spaced throughout the year. I personally recommend that you make vacations about 10 days. Leave the first and last days solely devoted to any travel you need to make. Also, if possible, definitely schedule a buffer day when you return. You gotta ease back into that bleak, soul-crushing daily grind after experiencing paradise, after all. Self-driving cars. They're coming! Whether you like it or not. The streets will soon be full of cars without drivers, which brings up a valid concern. A significant part of driving involves a lot of nonverbal signals and cues from the human pilots of those vehicles. Nods, waves, the hand, even just simple eye contact can determine a course of action that keeps all parties relatively safe on the roads. So what's a robot car gotta do to communicate with the human? Flash some lights. That's what Engadget says Ford and Virginia Tech are up to. Last week, I made a brief mention of a supposed driverless car tooling around Virginia, which turned out to be a human driver in full control, disguised as the empty driver's seat. This was part of this series of tests. Multiple specially modified Ford Transit Connects, with the disguised drivers, have a series of white lights on dedicated strips installed, which flash in specific sequences to indicate intent. The line of thought was, people are used to seeing flashing lights on vehicles communicating different things. For example, an ambulance with its lights on but siren off indicates that it has a patient aboard, but they are not in a life-threatening situation. Ford and Virginia Tech have been recording video from every angle from these fake autonomous vehicles, collecting reactions from other drivers and pedestrians to see how the flashing light communication is received. Ford is actually in discussions with, quote, multiple industry organizations and standards groups to come up with a formal system to be offered as a standard for all autonomous vehicles. They also have devised a separate system that would alert pedestrians that are visually impaired, although how the autonomous car could figure that out wasn't mentioned. Still, this is great, and I can't wait for self-driving cars. Especially self-driving designated driver cars. Business Insider reports, coincidentally, that analysts at Morgan Stanley recently assessed the potential impact of autonomous cars on the alcohol industry and came to this startling conclusion. By offering people who like the odd drink a ride home on demand from an autonomous vehicle, alcohol consumption overall will increase with, quote, significant accompanying benefits for drinks businesses. Jeez, I could have told them that. Seriously, Morgan Stanley broke all this down. People, hopefully, drink less or not at all if they have to drive. And time spent driving means that, hopefully, that's time spent not drinking. These markets should, for obvious safety reasons, be entirely mutually exclusive, said Morgan Stanley, evidently without bursting out laughing. They point out that since the introduction of ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft, drunk driving incidents have dropped in every city in which they operate. They specifically call out that there is an attitude shift happening, moving from, I can't drink because I have to drive, to, I can drink and someone else will drive me home. And from there, it's just a tiny hop to people starting to drink while riding in autonomous vehicles, because I can drink while I'm driving because I'm not actually driving. Morgan Stanley estimates that if drinking in your self-driving car does start to happen, the alcohol industry would see an increase of value of $56 billion, that's billion with a B, and a 0.8% increase in its, quote, overall 10-year compound annual growth rate. And if that doesn't really mean anything to you, remember, autonomous designated driver cars could potentially remove all impaired drivers from behind the wheel. And that would be amazing. So you spend all day weeding, digging out all those invasive plants that just magically show up every spring and summer. You have a dilemma. What do you do with all that plant waste? You could burn it, but that wouldn't be good for our fragile environment. You could throw it in your compost bin if you have one, but I've got a better idea. You should turn it into paper. Yes, you can actually do that, and you can learn how at this show's sponsor, Pulp and Deckel. Pulp & Deckel is Portland's only community handmade papermaking studio, and its mission is to keep the art of papermaking alive with workshops, demonstrations, creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products, and working with artists in creating all styles of art through the medium of papermaking. Browse a rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the ancient art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckle.com. Hey, if you mention I'll have a beer and talk when you talk to Pulp and Deckel, we might give you something special. Since I've been under more stress than usual these days, I've been consuming a bit more than usual and gained a small amount of weight. You're looking at my gut, aren't you? Well, I'm working on it. Hopefully, in the future, if you inadvertently put on a few extra pounds, you could slap a patch onto your most corpulent spots and have the fat just melt away. At least that's where I see research I read about on Engadget is going. In a new study published in ACS Nano, researchers at Columbia University and the University of North Carolina have developed a nanoparticle-coated patch that seems to be able to reduce fat, increase energy expenditure, and ease complications due to type 2 diabetes in obese mice. The patch is covered in an array of microscopic needles, each of which helps deliver special drugs directly into subdermal fat. These special drugs coax the body into turning energy-storing white fat into energy-burning brown fat. Just like mice, humans have white and brown fat, but as we get older, most of our brown fat just fades away, leaving the white fat. And it's a lot harder to lose that white fat. See, it's my age, it's not my lifestyle. The ability to turn white fat into brown fat, appropriately called the browning process, has largely been done using conventional and imprecise techniques such as pills or injections. This nano patch has the benefit of being able to concentrate the browning drugs into just the area where the white fat is just sitting there. In testing with obese rats, a patch with the browning drug was placed on one side, a patch without the drug was put on the rat's other side. Researchers noted that the side that had the drug showed a 30% reduction of a specific type of white fat in the area under that patch, and the amount of genes associated with brown fat showed an increase on that side as well. The patches with drugs were also tested on non-obese mice, which increased their metabolic activity and also upregulated brown fat genes as well. I'm sure you're now saying, shut up and take my money, but hold on. Li Quang, one of the lead researchers, understands how you feel but urges patience and perspective in this statement. Many people will no doubt be excited to learn that we may be able to offer a non-invasive alternative to liposuction for reducing love handles. What's much more important is that our patch may provide a safe and effective means of treating obesity and related metabolic disorders such as diabetes. So let the people who actually need it have it first. Then we can all be too thin. Mashable reports that researchers at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand published a study that shows that people feel sad when they've been rejected by a robot. That seems as obvious as self-driving cars will allow people to drink more, but this is another important study in figuring out how we humans are going to be interacting with our autonomous robotic friends? Servants? Overlords? Anyway, the researchers invited 147 volunteers to play Connect 4 with a, quote, 6-foot humanoid robot with a collection of integrated sensors and displays for safe interaction with humans named Baxter. Normally, the Baxter bots perform repetitive tasks on factory floors, but in this case, it's ready to play a game. This Baxter was equipped with the ability to speak and a screen for a face that could show expressions and even blink. The volunteers were put in a room with Baxter and encouraged to play Connect 4 with it, until there was a knock at the door saying the game time was up. Baxter was programmed to respond to the knock and say one of three different things to its human playmate. 1. Baxter would say, "That was fun. I would like to play with you again sometime," concluding with either, "Have a good day," or, "Goodbye." 2. Baxter would simply say, "Have a nice day," then, "Goodbye." 3. Baxter would blurt out, "That was boring. I don't want to play with you again. Goodbye." The study noted that the immediate goodbye at the end of the third exchange was intentional, to give the impression that Baxter was dismissing your presence. Rawr. The researchers measured the self-esteem of the volunteers immediately after the game sessions, and unsurprisingly, there wasn't much of a variation between people who got the first and second responses from Baxter. They were okay with Baxter and themselves. The people who got the third response, though, the interaction had a notable impact on their self-esteem. One participant even told Baxter to, quote, get fucked. Much like all the social testing going on with how people will react to self-driving cars, this is important work. If we're going to be interacting with robotic devices socially more and more, they need to be programmed to be as inoffensive as possible. Presumably, social robots will be built to provide comfort for those in need, i.e. the lonely and disconnected, the authors wrote. If robots inadvertently reject those who are most in need of social connection, even through social surrogacy, then a dip in self-esteem might be particularly problematic. And having negative interactions with robots will lead directly to the future seen in The Matrix. Or maybe not. I don't know. Actually, you know what? We're interacting with robotic intelligences already, and I think they're quite polite. By now, I'm sure you've talked to an Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft, or Samsung virtual assistant at least once, right? Kind of weird, right? I don't like talking to nothing in public myself, but I know a lot of people have found these virtual assistants to be extremely useful. But there is one function of these complex gadgets that's been overlooked, one that could be exploited. These devices, when allowed, listen to you all the time, waiting to respond to their activation phrase and help you as much as their metal minds can. However, their sophisticated microphones are actually too well designed and pose a security risk, according to an article I read at the MIT Technology Review. Qiuming Zhang and Chen Yan and a team at Zhejiang University in China had developed a system called... Are you ready for this? Dolphin Attack, which plays back commands virtual assistants, specifically Siri, Google, and an Audi voice-controlled navigation system, respond to at ultrasonic frequencies. That means that A, you can't hear what they're telling your virtual assistant to do, and B, the virtual assistant has no idea that you aren't the one delivering those commands. Normally, the microphones in these devices aren't sensitive to ultrasonic frequencies. They get filtered out by design. However, Dolphin Attack alters the ultrasonic frequency using amplitude modulation to play the ultrasonic sounds in the same frequency as normal, ordinary human speech. Because of the modulation, the microphone picks up the inaudible signals without issue. Now, before you go and burn all your virtual assistant devices, Qiuming says that the threat of ultrasonic commands can be mitigated. One way is to redesign the microphones these devices use to reduce their sensitivity to ultrasonic carrier waves. But to help with devices that can't have their microphones replaced, a software solution can be developed and applied as a system update. Ultrasonic commands have several unique differences from natural voice signals that should be trivial for software to recognize and filter out. Until then, though, I wouldn't tell one of these things any of your secrets. Like what you did last summer. You know what I'm talking about. Hey, guess what? Ants might not be as active and busy as you think. According to a 2015 study by biologists at the University of Arizona, an average of 40% of the members of an ant colony do absolutely nothing all day, which is my dream. I first heard about this story on Boing Boing, which led me to an article at phys.org. Daniel Charbonneau, who wrote his PhD thesis on the lazy ants, said, quote, "They really just sit there, and whenever they're doing anything other than doing nothing, they do chores around the nest, like a bit of brood care here or grooming another worker over there." The ants he studied, along with his doctoral advisor, Professor Anna Dornhaus, were a species named Temnothorax rugatullus, which is a pretty common species, and this behavior seems to be common in social insects overall, like honeybees. Now, a new paper published by Charbonneau and Dornhaus, along with Takao Sasaki of the University of Oxford in the journal PLOS ONE, shows that the lazy ants act as a reserve labor force. In a pair of separate experiments, they removed the top 20% laborers in a colony and the bottom 20%. The group that lost their top 20% showed the lazy ants stepped up quickly to take the place of the lost workers, but the colony that lost the bottom 20% didn't try to replace them, much like the U.S. economy. Charbonneau also noticed that most of the lazy ants had more distended abdomens and speculated that they may also serve as an emergency food source in a pinch, but this theory awaits further testing. As to the real purpose for having lazy ants for a colony... My speculation is this. Since young workers start out as the most vulnerable members of the colony, it makes sense for them to lay low and be inactive, Charbonneau says. And because their ovaries are the most active, they produce eggs, and while they're doing that, they might as well store food. When the colony loses workers, it makes sense to replace them with those ants that are not already busy pursuing other tasks. So the young shouldn't have to work unless their elders need to be replaced. Interesting theory. Well, I, for one, welcome our new lazy ant overlords. Hello, everyone! This show is not only supported by Pulp and Deckel, it's supported by listeners just like you! You're just like you, right? If you get value or entertainment from the show, maybe you too would like to support me. You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which I should let you know happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckel.com. That is gary@pulpanddeckel.com. Rates are reasonable. And if you could be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes, the more I have at's discoverability will go up for people looking for beery tech podcasts on iTunes. Makes sense. And you can also support the show directly with money. Yay, money. If you enjoy my show each week, you can donate at least $1 a month to its production costs at patreon.com/ihabitradio. That is patreon.com/ihabitradio. Go to patreon.com/ihabitradio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group that already support me there. I couldn't do it without you guys and girls. That was episode 99. So that means this is your last chance to have some input on episode 100, which is the next show I'm going to post, because 100 comes after 99. If you had any burning questions you wanted to have me answer on the show, or just maybe have a suggestion of something I should do, or even something I should drink, do not hesitate to make contact with me. And I've devoured the raspberry sour. That was really sweet, but that means it is time for me to go. Please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, aliens, plants, and the police squad about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckel.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at ihabitradio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/ihabitradio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!